Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Tucker drills one deep to right field. Forget about it. Three-run jack, Kyle Tucker. The Astros jump on Carlos Carrasco for a second straight time. Tucker with a three-run shot to right center to make it 4-0.
Carrasco was struggling, and the Astros capitalized, to say the least, as they beat the Mets 9-1 last night. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant is still on vacation. Where? We don't know. We just hope he's okay and has been drinking water. That's Josh Beard. We have Sean Mapes with us as well. How you doing, guys?
Doing great. We really don't know where Paul is.
No, we don't.
Do we? Paul is in our hearts always. We do know that.
He's not
always
dead.
With
he's
us.
He's just probably drunk.
Right. He's probably. Do you think that he's slept at all, or has it just been... When did he leave?
No.
He left like last Thursday.
And the problem is he has a lot of weddings to go to.
Right.
And I think Paul is definitely the enjoys weddings. The tie is at the side. Do we agree with this, Sean?
For
that
sure.
He's a wedding enjoyer.
Yes. I wish he would wear like a fitness thing so we can track how many steps he takes during a wedding. Because I imagine he hits every table at least once.
He's the guy that's like, Sweet Caroline, one more time. Bum, bum, bum.
Well, see,
so good.
Hey, Grandma, let's dance.
Like, weddings just bring that out.
Grandma's love.
Weddings bring that out in people in general. The last wedding I went to was in Wisconsin. It was nothing but hot toddies and fried cheese curds for me the entire night. And I'm not a big, like, drinker. I don't like going out and doing those things. So if I partook all night and I was, like, Sweet Caroline one more time, I can't imagine what Paul is like. Hopefully he's okay, he's safe, and he's enjoying
his
time.
And it's different when you're with your people. Like, if you're somebody's date to a wedding, or if it's someone, you know, your parents, friends, kid, whatever. But, like, when it's, like, your people, I mean, I went to a wedding in Indiana, and I know you're shocked, but it was, like, the catering was barbecue. It was in somebody's backyard,
right.
And it was a bunch of Bud Light, and it was fun as hell. And I was like, yeah, I won't go too crazy tonight. It definitely needed a ride to the hotel that night. So wherever you are, Paul Gallant, we hope that you're well.
We love you. Just know that we all love you no matter what.
Right. The Astros are fine. The Astros are getting jiggy with it themselves. What? Stop. 9-1. All hail King Tucker. The three-run homer is what you heard coming into our show. That's what we like to see. Wins like this that are dominant, especially since they split the series with the Yankees. Wins like this over the Mets that are dominant, where from the get-go, they just had it offensively. The pitching was great. Framber Valdez held the Mets scoreless on 6 hits over 8 innings. This is what we like to see from the Astros team.
Yeah, and especially, I know we've talked kind of ad nauseum about the type of month that Yordan Alvarez is having, and it only got better last night, right? His on-base percentage went up, his OPS went up, everything went up a little bit last night. But I think people don't realize just how, I guess for some people in Houston, maybe not so quietly, but nationally, how quietly Kyle Tucker has become one of baseball's best players. I'm not talking about one of the Astros' best players. I'm not talking about one of the American League's best players. I'm talking about one of baseball's best players. His WAR last night went up to 3.7, which is tied for third place with Aaron Judge and Yordan Alvarez. The only two people above them in WAR right now are Mike Trout at 4.2 and Rafael Devers at 3.9. But Kyle Tucker defensively is one of the best players in baseball right now. He's top 5 in stolen bases. He's top 5 in on-base percentage. He's top 5 in WAR right now. His offensive WAR, he's not in the top 10, even though his bat has been great. And as much as we love the split that Yordan Alvarez has had in the month of June, Tucker's hasn't been that bad either.
Right.
It's been pretty incredible. So when we've been talking this week about what we wanted to see out of them, what we wanted to see coming into these extra two games against the Mets, I just love the fact that, like, somebody said it on Twitter last night, can we just play the Mets every game for the rest of the year?
And the Mets are good.
Yeah, they're not a bad team.
Like, do you guys remember last year when the Astros would, like, and they did it this year to a certain extent, too, they would beat really good teams and lose to really bad teams.
Yeah.
It was extremely frustrating. So they have a good history, especially recently against these good teams. But seeing a solid teams like the Mets, yes, I know Scherzer isn't there. He's apparently going to start that recovery soon. But it is good to see them beat a good team and get a really dominant win.
Yeah, in this stretch, real fast for Tucker, just to see him be a guy who's stepping up to help them get this dominant win, when it's been kind of shaky to start the season. He was a little hot, then he got a little cold. Are we going to wear the batting gloves? Or are we not going to wear the batting gloves? What's the decision there?
Yeah, it was big batting gloves gate.
Batting gloves gate has been real
because
big for Kyle Tucker.
Because before the game,
yeah.
He was like, before one of the games against the Yankees, was it? Where he was like, yeah, I mean, they work. So it's like, why not? Like, why not? Why? Come on. Like, why would I not do it? And then that very game, he was like, they are no longer working. And then he hit a homer without him.
Yeah, that baseball never ceases to amaze me. Baseball players, the way superstition works with them. But I'm here for it. But in this stretch for June, he has 7 home runs, 22 RBIs. He has a 595 slugging, 977 OPS. He's taken 50 bases in the month of June. And he's been absolutely dominant. His stolen bases, 5 stolen bases this month. It's incredible to watch these two young phenoms. And yeah, I'm using phenom for Kyle. Come at me. Get in the text line. Oh. I'm calling Kyle Tucker a phenom.
It's only 10 a.m. We are going.
Yeah, I'm aggressive today. I'm aggressive. I thought about the HEB story yesterday, and I got aggressive today. So I'm calling Kyle Tucker a phenom. But it's amazing to watch these two young players just continue to lead this team. And this is what's so amazing about the Astros. And when we talk about how they can stay dominant for so long, it's because they continue to find players who can step into leadership roles anytime somebody leaves. You know, you have Carlos Correa's gone. Jeremy Peña can step up. You need to replace Carlos Correa's bat. Hey, Yordan's batting even better than he ever has. George Springer's gone. Look at this. Kyle Tucker's all of a sudden the guy.
They always have a deep enough roster to make it work.
And that's what dynasties do. That's what winning franchises do. That's what successful teams do. And it's just so much fun to watch and be a part of it.
Ooh, 3,000 on the text line said, let's tuck and go.
Yeah.
May have to use that on the broadcast, unless it cancels me. I like that. Yeah, let's tuck and go.
That's such, come on, you can't be like, unless it. No, you have to be all in or all out.
Let's tuck and go.
There we go.
But it's also, a dog.
But also.
Kyle Tucker, certified dog.
Kyle Tucker is a dog. That's also something I can totally see Jeff Blum getting away with.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm not sure if Vanessa can get away with it.
No.
You know, you are just filling, so.
Not
just filling. You are filling.
Wow. Maybe. He dropped the just to filling. I think it's more about the fact that I'm not a former player. I think former players can get away with things that other common folk, even seasoned broadcasters, can't because they are former players. And Jeff Blum is so well-liked that he can get away with anything. Guys, Michael Brantley to the IL with a shoulder issue.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing about Michael Brantley. There was a stretch of games where he was one that was really getting the offense going. Does it concern you, the shoulder issue? We don't have a timetable because the Astros never really give timetables. Are we concerned about Uncle Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's a concern there just because he's been such a productive player for the team for so long. It's easier to not be too concerned about. I think there's definitely time for him to recover and come back. He's struggled at times this season. Now, obviously, lately, he's been doing a heck of a lot better. But to start the season, there was a bit of a struggle there. There's a little concern because you're always concerned when somebody's injured. But in the long haul, with the way everybody's playing and with the way the bats are going right now, I think they have the luxury of being able to rest him a little bit more and give him more time to come back ready. So I'm not super concerned. If we're on a 10-point scale of concern, I'm at like a 2 or a 3 right now. It's very minimal concern.
1143, mother tucking. I like that one too. You guys are getting me with the wordplay today.
That one makes me uncomfortable.
Mother tucking?
Yeah. With my producer background and me having been somebody that's super scared about, like, that just freaks me out. That one.
We'll talk throughout the show. I think the national media guys are starting to get on board with the Astros, which we've seen every year, especially since the cheating scandal. It takes them a while. And I think that's starting to happen as well. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the latest on the Deshaun Watson situation. Plus, it sounds to me like there's a relationship that could be mended if you read between the lines. That's coming up.
You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
We got a noon game, guys. Go Stros. A little noon action against the New York Mets as the Astros close out their long series in New York. Not closed out yet is the situation involving Deshaun Watson. That hearing is continuing today. That's, of course, per Adam Schefter and Dan Graziano and the myriad of reporters that are covering this closely. This is staying really tight-lipped.
It is,
because
way
we
more
have
than
no
I thought.
Idea what happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. We have no idea how either side think that it went. And what we usually see with everything involving Deshaun Watson is that his side has, you know, obviously tried to leak things that make them look good. The NFL has tried to, I think, leak things, whether it's through their NFL Network reporters, et cetera, that make Deshaun Watson look bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, leak narratives such as, well, Ben Roethlisberger got these games for one woman. The things that, you know, kind right. of you've brought up. We're not hearing any of that. So maybe both sides are actually respecting this kind of NFL legal type process. But that is set to continue through at least today. It sounds like it could seep into tomorrow, possibly. So, again, I am keeping high hopes that we have an answer on Thursday, even though it's highly likely that both sides could appeal.
Yeah, and this kind of leans in more into what both, or really all three of us thought yesterday, that we're probably not going to hear anything from this until Friday at the latest, or Friday at the earliest, sorry. It could be as late as Monday. We're about to go into a long weekend soon. Like, there are so many reasons for them to wait on this decision and to wait to leak any of this stuff. I would bet that Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport have at least heard little rumblings.
Agree.
And especially with all the gaffes that Schefty has had lately over the last 6 to 8 to 9 months, really the last year hasn't been the prettiest for Adam Schefter at times. I'm guessing he's probably sitting on this one and waiting until he knows more information.
Yeah, between the Dwayne Haskins tweet,
right,
the Deshaun Watson finally vindicated yes. tweet, that or whatever.
Finally vindicated with
it was
24
like it was there's been a lot.
Yeah, there's been a lot of mess. But this, we're not going to hear any. This is going to be a Friday or Saturday, like you said, news dump where we're going to start to see some leaks come out from this. I did think we would at least hear some semblance of a rumbling about the way the conversations went on day one. Like, at least, like, the line of questioning, what Sue L. Robinson and Deshaun Watson were talking about, how it was working. But I absolutely think that it's too big of a case. It is the biggest situation, or at least one of the biggest situations the NFL has ever had to deal with, right? When we keep throwing the word unprecedented around it, because it is unprecedented. So it's one of the biggest situations they've ever had to deal with. So they have to handle this the right way. And that means that if they have an outside arbitrator, they probably told her, literally go as far as you can with all of this investigation, take as long as you need to take, but as long as we get this figured out before the season, then we can make a decision and we can move forward. But I absolutely think this will seep into tomorrow, which tomorrow apparently is Thursday. I didn't know that.
Wait.
I was coming into the show today thinking today was Thursday.
I thought today was Tuesday. Okay,
so yeah, see, you're
Wednesday.
A day behind.
Okay.
I'm a day ahead.
Guys, let's
so
live between in the moment.
Between, Sean. Yeah, let's live. Sean's shaking his head. Between
Sean's like these people.
This is why we work well together, though, Sean, because we balance out. Like, I'm in the future, she's in the past.
True.
We balance each other out in the present. That's how we work. So, but yeah, this could seep into tomorrow, which is Thursday, and then we can start to hear rumblings on Friday. It kind of leans itself perfectly into that.
I think that a lot of times people think that Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport and those guys make up stories. And while they do have things that have been stretched, you know, it's Sunday, they got to have a story.
Right.
They all of a sudden have a new nugget on Aaron Rodgers. This is proof that journalists usually know way more than they say.
Yes.
Because I guarantee they both have been on the phone with David Mulligata. I guarantee mm-hmm. they both have at least spoken to people in the NFL and some of the other owners, and I just think, like you said, the severity of the situation and the implications that it could have.
You can't get this one wrong. You can't.
No, you can't.
It has to be right before you say or do anything.
And David Mulligata seems to have a chokehold on the league with the amount of money he's able to get for some of his players. Speaking of the money he's able to get for some of his players, one of those players was Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. The Pat McAfee Show, I think, is a must-listen on a lot of days.
Yes.
And one of the things that they're really good about, he and his friends are really good about asking, like, the layman's questions and just admitting when they don't know something. So they had an interesting conversation with Andrew Brandt yesterday, which, of course, he was with the Packers. He's a former GM, et cetera, et cetera. Did a lot of contracts. And talked about just how rock solid and white whale of a contract Deshaun's was.
Right.
And it's shocking not only because of the fact that it's a big contract, but everything he was going through. Here's Andrew Brandt on that Watson contract.
He's going to make $45 million locked. It's already paid. Signing bonus, $45 million. Done. Done. He can't give it back. It's not subject to forfeiture for suspension. So the only thing subject to forfeiture for suspension is the $1 million salary. That's it. So if he's gone a year, instead of $46 million, he makes $45 million. And what I said last time, I've been told this by a league person that looked at the contract that basically said the first 2 years, there's nothing they can do about conduct that's already coming in with. Assume the 24 lawsuits. Assume what they know. Now, the last 3 years, there's potential voids of guarantees for new misbehavior. Something else. Something else comes up. Now, the question as a lawyer, I look at and say, okay, this stuff from Jenny Ventris and New York Times, is that new? And I would argue if I'm the Browns, I guess. No, if I'm Watson, I would argue that's not new. I've been doing that behavior a long time.
Jeez.
So it's the same behavior, just more of it in these new articles, in these new reports about what he did with this and what he did with that. So it's a lock solid contract as far as what he's done already. Now, new misbehavior they can go after later in the contract. But this misbehavior, he's locked in. I mean, the guy has $45 million for this year already.
So first of all, I didn't know that about the new behavior type of the clause. And that's why I like talking to people that work in sports, but also have that law degree and that GM background, because they can break it down. I had no idea that that was the case. And that, I think, could become a major point of contention, which is why I had us play that clip. If he does get in trouble, how are they going to try to finesse that? Well, these aren't new allegations, but the Browns say, wait, there were four more suits added or whatever since we signed you.
Well, that's the thing. They're new allegations on old behavior. They're just
finding out
about old behavior. So in my mind, and look, I'm not a great legal mind. I'm no Mike Meltzer sitting in front of this microphone, but I do like to fancy myself a connoisseur of the legal and the debate. I would argue, and I think you could successfully argue, like Andrew Brandt said, this is just the same old behavior that people are finding out about. We already knew there were 66. We already knew the amount of women he saw. Now more people are giving allegations on old behavior. This isn't new behavior, and I think they'd win that pretty substantially. The contract, look, I don't blame the Browns for taking a chance on a franchise quarterback, on trying to get their franchise quarterback. But yesterday I said I feel bad for Browns fans. I feel bad for some of the Browns players, and I do. I empathize with them. But can I just say that the structuring of this contract, knowing what they knew, knowing what was probably going to happen, is one of the most egregiously disgusting things I have ever seen in professional sports outside of Deshaun Watson and the actual acts that led to his allegations. But by a franchise, this is one of the grossest things I've ever seen. And I want nothing but failure for the Browns moving forward. I never want them to be a successful franchise. I don't want them in an AFC championship. I don't want them to win a Super Bowl. I will root against them until my dying breath. Mm. The Browns, to me, are the villain of the NFL for not necessarily enabling the behavior, but rewarding Deshaun Watson with a contract that could get him that much money, even though he did the things that he did.
It's one of the greatest lines from Dumb and Dumber. So you're telling me there's a chance.
Right.
So you're saying there's a chance. When I heard what Baker Mayfield said yesterday at a camp, I'm thinking there is a small chance, not saying it's big, not saying it will happen. I think there's a chance that he could suit up for the Browns. Listen to this.
But I think a lot of people think if they didn't have a quarterback for the next year, would there be any chance of reconciliation there?
No, I think for that to happen, there would have to be some reaching out, but we're ready to move on, I think, on both sides.
There would have to be some reaching out. So he didn't say no. So he didn't say there's no chance. And this is what I go back to. There would need to be some reaching out. It's like when I'm ending things with a guy. If I say it's done, it's over, I really don't want to talk to him, we're good here. Hands are wiped. If I say something like, well, it's done, but like if he wanted to have a conversation, I would be fine with that. If he wants to meet up over coffee and get some closure, why not? If I say that, that means there's still a chance. And what I heard from Baker Mayfield was that there is still a chance.
So how many times have guys overlooked those comments? Like, if you want to have a conversation, like how many times have they been like, no, it's not worth it. You already said it's over. How many times has that happened?
Well, I don't date a lot. So I've never been rejected for a closure conversation.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I've been rejected a lot. And all of them have been closure conversations. No, I've been married for way too long to be rejected.
I was going to say. Yeah. No, but what you guys know what I'm getting at, which is like, he didn't shut it down completely. There would need to be some reaching out.
He went to slam.
Opening.
Exactly. He went to slam the door and then he stopped it. Right before, and there's that little crack there. There's a really good show on Amazon Prime called Fleabag. It's very, very good.
Okay, I've heard about this.
It's so funny. It's not appropriate. So be careful. Like,
not for the children.
Yeah, not for the children. But it's hilarious. And it follows this woman who is, she has all these issues, all these things. And one of the things, she constantly breaks up with her boyfriend. She has this like serious boyfriend. They break up. He moves out. But he cleans the apartment and he always leaves one thing behind. He leaves one little thing behind, and she's like, he'll be back. Because that one thing is there. Because he uses it as an excuse to come back and get it. They have a conversation. They get back together. And in one of the episodes of the first season, he goes to leave that one thing behind, walks back in the door, grabs it, and walks out. And then she's like, uh-oh. Because now she knows that crack isn't open. That's what Baker Mayfield's doing now. He's the boyfriend in Fleabag who's broken up with the Browns, and he's moved out. He cleaned the stadium.
It's not a divorce yet. Exactly. I mean, it's not a divorce yet. It hasn't been made official. So we'll see what happens with that. But I certainly heard an opening there. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. 72 days until the NFL season. Let's hope Josh Beard has a nice number 72 picked out. There's somebody that we're going to compare to the Live Golf Tour, which might be controversial, but trust me, you need to hear this. You don't want to miss it. That's coming up next.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
All right, we are back and we are rolling. On a Wednesday, both Josh and I have had a lot of issues deciding what day it is, but we've decided that it is a Wednesday.
Is it? Are we sure?
So
100% confirmed?
I've been thinking it's Thursday the whole time. We do gambling segments on Thursday, so I put the gambling segment in, but it is not. It's Wednesday. You thought it was Tuesday.
Okay, you know what? Gambling. Let's take odds on what day it is. No, I thought it was Thursday.
Oh, you thought
you
it was
thought
Thursday.
It was Tuesday.
Initially, I thought it was Tuesday,
and then I messed you up,
right?
And so now you think.
And so
it's
then
Thursday.
I was like, okay, well, then we have to put the gambling segment.
What are the
it's
odds?
Thursday.
Okay, so I'm going to say the odds on day it is. I'm going to put Wednesday at -150. I'm going to put Thursday at +250.
What are the odds that I have early onset Alzheimer's? Because I can't remember this.
That's I'm going to say at least 15%.
Yeah,
I'm older than you. That's more terrifying, though. Like if we might both have it. And then if we both have it, that means
you're like
I'm going
to
start.
Though, you're so dramatic about being in your 30s.
I'm 36. I'm close to 40.
That's
not just
Sean,
in the 30s.
Does he not sound?
I'm inching closer.
You said that he's being dramatic, and then he immediately got more dramatic about being 30.
Paul's like, how old is Paul? 32?
33. And he That's reminds
young.
Us all the time.
That's young.
Because he's like, my career is over. I am a grandfather.
Well, what makes it feel worse for me is, A, I'm not in shape like. If I were in shape like Paul was, I wouldn't complain about my age at all. But I'm not in shape, so my body doesn't work correctly. I'm 36, and all of my limbs are 72. You know what I mean?
No.
The thing that makes it worse is I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she's going on 14.
Okay, I will
that
say...
That makes it worse.
You had I forgot you had kids young, so yeah. I will say having a teenage daughter...
Shh. You know what she told me yesterday? I could have saved this for Wine Wednesday, but yesterday she was like, hey, you know what? I can't believe I'm going to get my driver's permit in 2 years, and I just walked out of
yeah,
the room.
Yeah, you're like,
I
didn't why even did say you? So anything. How old were you when you had her?
I was, oh my gosh, now I have to do math. I was 22 when my wife got pregnant. I was 22.
Gotcha. Having a kid would make me feel old real quick. It'd make me want to do a lot of things.
Yeah, we're having trouble counting how many days it's been this week. I don't know how we're going to make it to 72 more days until the NFL offseason.
Last So I'm finally like finalizing my move. So I had a month where I had both apartments, and today the movers come, whatever. And I am having a hard time making decisions on what I want my living room to look like in my new apartment. Do I want to keep my old couch? Do I want to donate it? And I think I'm leaning towards donating it and buying a new one, whatever. And I realized like that I had forgotten to pay one of my bills. So here I am. I can't decide on my furniture. I can't remember to pay bills. And I'm like, how would I have a child? Like, how could that even happen?
You learn, it's trial by fire, and you're scared all the time.
Okay.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
sounds
awesome.
Great. Sounds fun. 72 days until the NFL season kicks off.
Yep.
Josh Beard, who's in for Paul Gallant, your pick for this number 72 NFL jersey
NFL
number.
NFL jersey number. I know. I messed up on Friday. I tried to cheat. I tried to work
our
the system.
Our listeners have held you accountable. I'm proud
well,
of them.
I know, and I've been grounded for the last few days from picking a jersey number, I understand. So I'm
no,
gonna...
you've literally... picked a jersey.
No, I
has he not picked a jersey number?
I think we might have forgotten
the
you.
Last.
Okay,
the last
we
two days
it.
We've forgotten. I don't
he really
forget
is like
anything.
Paul. It's great. He is the perfect substitute.
No, I'm not. Paul Gallant. Shut up. Dan Dierdorf is my pick. He's my favorite 72. Dan Dierdorf is my pick for the greatest 72. He is one. He's in the Hall of Fame. He was a great player for an incredibly long time. I'm pretty sure he was in three Super Bowls with the 49ers, right? He played in three of those Super Bowls with the 49ers. Dan Dierdorf is my 72.
Michael Bennett snubbed.
Michael Bennett snubbed. Nah, me Bennett.
Bennett's
not happening.
Great Texas A&M Aggie.
Yeah, great Texas A&M Aggie. Bad NFL player.
Okay, so speaking of the NFL, there are going to be a host of games on Amazon. This is obviously a huge moment, I think, in sports history. That's not dramatic to say because this is a streaming platform. There's not other shows so far, sports shows on that, you know, platform that really support the cause. But we're going to have some NFL games on Amazon this year. Yes, we are. And that means that there need to be broadcasters. And they announced yesterday that Carissa Thompson will be the host pregame, halftime, postgame. Ooh. I think she's one of the best hosts in the game, so I was really excited about this. I'm extremely excited about seeing Fitzmagic make his debut. They're going to have Richard Sherman. They're going to have Tony Gonzalez. And then, of course, doing play-by-play and color,
yep.
Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit, respectively. So, this led me to a really disturbing conclusion.
Okay.
Actually, it led Sean Mapes to a disturbing conclusion that I'm stealing. Credit where it's due.
At least you're honest about it.
Yeah, I don't
it.
Like
yeah.
to steal other
That's
people's
fair.
Material.
Respect.
I'm like, I whenever there's a show that somebody takes credit for a producer's thought, I'm like, you're a terrible person.
Yeah, same. Yep. Having been a producer that went into on-air talent and host, same.
Yeah, no, I don't do that. Good person. Give me a humanitarian award. Is Amazon the Live Golf Tour of streaming platforms? Now, hear me out.
Yeah.
Hear me out. Is Amazon the Live Tour of NFL broadcasting? Because they are stealing talent from other networks. They are passing them off as their own. Oh, they're offering big money, all right. It's Amazon. That's that. Is it Jeff Bezos' money? The difference, obviously, being that Amazon is not backed by Saudi Arabia. But other than that, there are a lot of similarities, I promise. Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, Carissa Thompson, they just announced yesterday. I think she's one of the best hosts in the game, doing pregame, halftime, and post. Tony Gonzalez, Richard Sherman, Ryan Fitzmagic.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys, Tony Gonzalez, I think, used to work at Fox, if I'm not mistaken. He's still at Fox, right? Because he's with...
See, this is part of where it gets confusing because Kirk Herbstreit is going to still do college football for ESPN.
For ESPN. And Carissa Thompson is still doing pre, half, and post for Fox.
Just like how Phil Mickelson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau can all play in the majors.
Yes.
But they're in the Saudi tour.
But they are in the Saudi tour. They are not in Saudi Arabia, so their lives are not in danger.
In Oregon.
Or so we think. They're in London. They're in nice places, but they're getting that Saudi money, hence all the controversy. We're not going to get into that. But what I do know is that the Amazon folks are acting as if they're the Live Golf Tour folks. They're snagging talent. They're paying a lot of money. Yes, their broadcasters can still do other things.
Well, what's interesting is it's because Amazon's not a broadcast company. So if even if you do a non-compete, what are you doing a non-compete?
Right.
Like you could word a non-compete in a way where, say, any kind of broadcast. But Amazon's not a broadcast company. This is where I look at
the graphic, Sean.
This is where I look at Amazon as being the live. So I like the perspective of stealing talent. What's funny is I literally, when Ryan Fitzpatrick retired, I told my wife, it's only going to be days before we find out he's doing commentary or something.
Comedy gold.
And she's like, are you really that beard? Because she hates his beard. She's like, really that beard? I'm like, no, he's incredible. He's intelligent. He's going to get a job.
The
then bam,
hair,
he's on
baby.
Amazon. Yeah. Amazon, this is the marketing to the younger generations of the NFL is where Amazon is killing it. That's mm-hmm. where the, I'm very interested to see what these Amazon broadcasts are going to look like. They're going to be totally different than a TV broadcast we've seen before because yeah. Amazon has its ties to the world of Twitch and the world of esports. And as you guys know, that's my bread and butter, baby. That's yeah. where I live on Twitch now. So not only does Amazon have their normal broadcast, their regular broadcast, one of the ways they're marketing to an entirely different group of people, an entirely different generation, is Amazon owns Twitch. And they allow some of their streamers, it's 15 streamers, they allow them to co-stream Thursday Night Football on their channel. We can actually, I'm one of the 15.
What?
I'm one of the 15 people.
You're
that,
part of the Saudi golf tour?
No, not the Saudi golf tour. Just, I have a deal with the NFL and Twitch to co-stream Thursday Night Football. A bunch of other huge streamers. I'm very lucky because I'm small fries. A bunch of other huge streamers, Nick Merck, some of those other guys, they can stream Thursday Night Football. We have a predictions competition against each other, some really fun stuff. And Amazon's putting money and effort and time into being able to market to that younger generation that, you know, maybe they like to watch people play video games on Twitch and also like the NFL, or maybe they could get interested in the NFL. So not only do they have their main Amazon broadcast,
right. They have their main gig.
They also have all these little side things that people are doing where, I mean, last season I was watching Thursday Night Football. I was doing my own commentary over it, talking jokes, had a community. Everybody's hanging out and all those other streamers did too. And it literally people would come in and be like, I've never really watched football before, but this is actually a lot of fun. I want to watch it. And then they would go from our channel to the actual Amazon broadcast and watch that. And
I like so what you brought up
marketing.
About the broadcast.
Great marketing.
Because I think the broadcast, you know, similar to when we've seen people change it up with morning shows and whatnot, I think there's a potential that there could be funny interviews, interesting segments.
Yes.
Do you remember like the XFL? I always bring this up because I thought it was so great that they had, I think it was like Diana Rossini and one other male ESPN.
I think Pat McAfee was on the
Pat
side.
McAfee yes. did a couple, and they would interview guys after making big plays, and that had not been done before. Mm-hmm. And it, I thought, changed, had the potential, now hashtag COVID happened, to change a lot of the broadcasts. You bring up a great point. I think whatever they do with these broadcasts, it's going to be trial by fire. And if it's a success, all of a sudden we're going to yep. see a lot less buttoned up.
Yeah.
And a lot
more loose.
A lot more loose. And that's what our generation wants. Well, my generation, because you're old. Per your words. He didn't even hear that. Coming up.
I heard it.
And he tuned out just like Coggelon. Ladies and gentlemen, put a bow on it.
Don't you
ever. The traffic makes me late. I'm old at 33 and I don't listen to Vanessa.
Don't you ever accuse me of tuning out like Paul Gallant.
We love it. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we got Josh Beard with us, of course, and we appreciate him hanging out. Some AFC chatter. Plus, should the Texans trade for this very controversial player? That's next.
Blue and Red Rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, the AFC is loaded. That's probably the most obvious statement that could be made when it comes to the NFL. If you're in the NFC, good job, and you got a much easier path to the playoffs. We've talked a lot about how crazy it is that somebody has to finish last in the AFC West, which is just probably the most loaded division in and
right.
of itself. But the AFC in general, very, very loaded. It's going to be difficult for a lot of the teams that are on the cusp to be able to break through and win a game or two in the playoffs. CBS Sports had a great article, and I'm glad that you brought this up and that we were watching this. One underappreciated player on each AFC team.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of stars in the AFC, so underappreciated, we're not going to be like Patrick Mahomes is like Jonathan Taylor's underappreciated. But let's look at some of these players that they have listed as being legitimately underappreciated. The one that stands out the most to me, probably because I covered the Bengals for 2 years, in Cincinnati, Joe Mixon.
Yeah, I actually think that that's spot on. If you think about it, when you think about the Bengals offense and who gets the most love, it's Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase after last season first, right? And then people talk about T. Higgins. Like, T. Higgins could be a wide receiver one on another team. It's insane that he's a wide receiver two, and this is the core that they have, blah, blah, blah. But Joe Mixon ends up being the forgotten guy in that offense, and he is. I don't think people realize how quietly dominant he has been as a running back over the last 3 years.
And the storyline with the Bengals last year, of course, was how young they were.
Right.
So you did have a lot of these veteran guys that maybe it's weird, like maybe didn't get the respect they deserve.
Right.
Respect and attention. Joe Mixon is one of them.
Well, what's crazy is Joe Mixon's 25. He's going to turn 26 in the middle of the season.
Yeah, so the fact that I'm saying he's old is like...
Well, that kills me, right? We talk all the time about like wide receivers and running backs. If they're 30-plus, they're over the hill and they're done. Their careers are on the decline. Where's the cliff? And that makes me feel really great about myself. But Joe Mixon's 25. He's at the peak age for optimal performance for a running back, but he is a veteran on that offense just because of how young they are.
CBS Sports has Brandon Cooks listed as an underappreciated player for, of course, you know, reading this article, it's underappreciated players in the AFC, Brandon Cooks for the Houston Texans, according to CBS Sports. I agree with this. Now, I do think that Brandon Cooks is the player that they like to market the most because he is a veteran. He has a lot of experience, and he helped lead this very young Texans team last year. But listen to what they wrote. Brandon Cooks still one of the most productive wide receivers in the NFL, despite being the top target of the rebuilding Texans. He's reached 1,000 receiving yards in 6 seasons since he entered the league in 2014, tied for the second most 1,000-yard seasons in the NFL during that span, and it came with 4 different teams. That last sentence there, the fact that Brandon Cooks has been able to produce with every team he's been with, including a rookie Davis Mills. We didn't know what we were going to see from Davis Mills. We want to know what you guys think. Who is the most underrated player on each AFC team? You can give us the Texans or, of course, any AFC team that you wish. 713-780-3776.
I'm going to pick one on offense and one on defense. Brandon,
I love that. Okay.
Brandon Cooks is the obvious choice, right? Like, when we talk about Brandon Cooks, I don't even think he's necessarily underappreciated from a Texans perspective. I think he's just underappreciated from an NFL perspective. I mean, look, he was on 4 different teams.
And
he was productive
on
all of them.
That's what I was about
to
say.
He kept getting moved, right? I think he's underappreciated from an NFL perspective. For all of you fantasy football players out there, I think he's wildly underappreciated from a fantasy football perspective. The guy finished 26th last year overall in wide receivers. He could probably do the same thing with another. Pep Hamilton's now the offensive coordinator. Another year of seasoning for Davis Mills. He could be in there. But underappreciated in the Texans is Brandon Cooks for sure. I'm going to pick two other players, one on offense, one on defense. I think one of the most underappreciated players on the offense as a whole outside of Brandon Cooks is Titus Howard. Titus Howard has quietly become one of the strongest assets on the Texans' offense and offensive line and helps bookend those tackle positions with Laremy Tunsil. And I think Titus Howard has actually played pretty well. I mean, obviously, his first season, they kind of had him bouncing around. Is he a tackle? Is he a guard?
But especially
is he a left
when you
tackle?
Look at
right
everything
tackle?
They went through with Laremy Tunsil.
Yes.
Titus Howard provided a lot of consistency.
Yeah, and so I think he's wildly underappreciated on the offensive side of the ball. The defensive side of the ball, because everybody just looks at the Texans' defense, and rightly so, and says, ooh, there's not a lot of talent there. They're not very good. They were the 31st or 32nd ranked defense last year in the NFL. Jonathan Greenard, I think, is a very underappreciated player for the lack of talent that the Texans have on both sides of the ball as a whole, but especially on defense, and the lack of ability to rush the passer that they have on the defensive line. I really feel like Jonathan Greenard goes out there and shows more than what we expect, but nobody thinks about it. Nobody looks at it past that because they're losing games. The defense is struggling. They're allowing teams to score a bunch of points because the secondary is not that great. But Jonathan Greenard, I think, is a very underappreciated player on that defense.
I wish that you couldn't put that they made a rule for this list where they wouldn't use quarterbacks because if they have Justin Herbert for the Chargers. Like, Justin Herbert's not underappreciated. He's the quarterback. I will say, when they have Derek Carr with the Raiders, I do think Derek Carr is underappreciated in general.
Yes, agreed.
Derek Carr is consistent. I was there when he beat the Colts. It was extremely painful at Lucas Oil Stadium. Here's what they have about Derek Carr. His passing yards, 4th in the league during the span, while his 78 68.7 completion rate is second in the league amongst quarterbacks with over 1,000 attempts, the Raiders' all-time passing leader, et cetera, et cetera. The criticism comes from the number of pick sixes he's thrown, right, which has been his Achilles heel. But then they mentioned that he may be the fourth best quarterback in his own division. That's what leads me to think that he is underrated. I'm really excited to see what he can do with Devontae Adams.
Same. And the Derek Carr slander, and look, a little bit of that has been earned, a little bit has been deserved, but there were a few. It wasn't that long ago we were talking about Derek Carr as a future perennial MVP candidate. Like, we were talking about Derek Carr as like possibly being this part of this new generation of quarterbacks that's going to take over for the Tom Brady's and the Peyton Manning's. Then he has a couple of bad seasons. They fall apart. Antonio Brown is a train wreck. John Gruden. Like, there's so many issues going on with the Raiders, and we all just forgot about Derek Carr. But I do think he is consistently in the top 8 to top 12 quarterbacks in the NFL. He's constantly producing for that team. Last year, they went through so many issues and so many problems. Darren Waller had a down year. They lost a wide receiver to a heinous act. Lost their head coach.
And they still got it together.
And he still found a way to make that, to have that team win. Hunter Renfrow jumped on the scene at, I don't typically love 26-year-old breakout wide receivers, but Hunter Renfrow, I'm making an exception for, but Derek Carr being on, I agree, he is undervalued and underappreciated on this list. Another one that stuck out to me, too, and I don't feel, maybe I guess this is a little true, but I think it's because of the rhetoric surrounding this player, but Lamar Jackson was their pick for the Ravens. As an underappreciated player,
I think
he's adequately appreciated.
I think he is very adequately appreciated, and that's shocking to me because the Ravens had so many injuries last year that you could have listed a lot of guys, so that was an odd choice. But this is a good article.
The one for the Ravens moving forward, and I will sing his praises. If you are in fantasy drafts, you need to look for this guy. He is going to jump on the scene in his
sophomore endorsement.
Year. Rashad Bateman is going to be one of the better wide receivers in the NFL. And I feel like if we look back on this at the end of the season, we're going to say, oh my goodness, how did we underappreciate Rashad Bateman? Now that he's the wide receiver one, Marquise Brown is gone. Hollywood's over in Arizona. He has the chance to be the guy who can get the 146 targets from Lamar this year. Now, part of the reason why he's wildly underappreciated from the Ravens' perspective is their scheme is a lot. It's very run heavy. Lamar runs the ball a lot, and so they don't pass the ball a ton. But Hollywood Brown had 146 targets last season. He caught like 101 of them, something like that. So Rashad Bateman has the opportunity to be that. He will go down as one of the most underappreciated players and undervalued players going into the season at the season's end.
Coming up, should the Texans trade for this very controversial player? And if the Texans do trade somebody or get a free agent, who do you want it to be? That's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.